Good morning, everyone. I'm Playbook co-author Ryan Lizza. It's Monday, April 15th, and here's what's driving the day. In the House, Speaker Mike Johnson is planning to focus on foreign policy this week. You'll remember that actually the House was going to do something called Appliance Week, but the conflict in the Middle East has changed that, and there will be a series of votes on Iran. That's what we know so far. Obviously, the big question is what his exact plan is for votes on aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. That remained in flux late last night, with Fox reporting that some details were still being negotiated between the Speaker and the White House. Over in the Senate, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is expected to take up the House's recently passed reauthorization of FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and they'll do that as early as tonight. The Senate is still waiting on the House to send over the articles of impeachment against DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. When they do so, the Senate will swear in senators for the trial the following day. We're told that the articles of impeachment against Mayorkas and the necessity to swear in the senators could affect the FISA getting wrapped up. But both of those things are on the agenda in the Senate early this week. Of course, the biggest story of today is a very different trial, the one starting in Manhattan, where Donald Trump is the first former president to face a criminal prosecution. Joining me now to talk more about that is senior staff writer Ankush Kardori. Good morning, Ankush.
Hi, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So, first day of the trial, you have been writing about it quite a bit. What do you have your eye on as this trial begins in Manhattan?
Well, as it gets underway, I'm actually going to be more interested, oddly, in what's happening outside the courtroom, what kinds of protests we're seeing, what kind of media presence we're seeing from conservative media in particular, whether we're going to see a bunch of Trump supporters, whether we're going to see some Republican politicians out there. I'm going to be curious to see what we can glean about Donald Trump's movements in and out of the courtroom, whether he's going to be taking opportunities to speak or try to communicate with the media. And sort of the potentially circus-like atmosphere. Inside the courtroom, I think things may be sort of a little...
Take us inside there in terms of what... This is sort of unprecedented. You worked in the federal government, so Manhattan's probably a little bit different, but what should the non-lawyer know about what this is going to look like inside?
So on the first day of a trial, there can be some delays, and this is going to be a complicated case with a lot of moving parts and security and all that. So we might see some delays, but we're supposed to see the start of voir dire. And so that's the process by which the judge enlists jurors and screens them to see who's going to be selected. The judge has issued an order about how that's going to look, but that's really going to be the thing that occupies the next week or potentially a couple weeks.
Tell us a little bit about that. So Judge Juan Merchan last week issued an order to both sides, and it sort of lays out the process of jury selection, if I've got that right.
Yeah, the judge issued an order last week. It's publicly available. It's short and quite interesting, in which he describes...
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah.
What's interesting about it?
The most interesting to me, because this is just something I'm not intuitively familiar with, was he has decided to do away with one step of the process that usually exists. So usually, jurors are first asked whether they believe they cannot be fair and impartial. And some people will say, you know, I don't think I can be under the circumstances, but then the judge will bring them up and sort of ask them some more specific questions, tell them about how a trial really works and how facts and evidence and instructions from judges work. And judges can usually bring people around to the idea that, you know, I actually can't sit on this jury. The judge is not doing that this time. His order indicates that they're doing away with those follow-up interviews. So in this case, it appears that anyone who raises their hand and says they can't be fair and impartial is going to be able to get off the jury.
Huh. So a get out of jail card for anyone who walks in there and doesn't want to deal with this.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one in this case because I don't know who it helps. Usually, you would expect people to want to get off a jury, and we're probably going to see a lot of that. And you would expect people to take up that opportunity. In this case, there might be some people who actually really want to get on the jury. Also, like, who are the people who are going to say that they're not fair and impartial? I imagine a lot of Trump haters who are probably people the DA's office would secretly like to see on the jury. There may be some very adamant Trump supporters even who say, you know, it's Trump and he's... I would never find him guilty of a crime or something like that. That's going to get you, that would get you bounced and be a reason for you to say that you can't be fair and impartial. So like, I don't know which way it cuts.
How does the legal system think about, and how common is it to be able to find 12 people that don't actually know about the kind of stuff that we obsess about all the time?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be obviously a much harder than average jury selection because it involves Donald Trump. He's the president, right? But like, I have a lot of confidence in our fellow lawyers. and I think this judge is prepared potentially for this to take a long time, and it may need to take a long time. But the other thing that like makes the order interesting that I just mentioned is we won't be able to see the jury selection process, but the judge also released all of the questions.
Which ones struck you as the most interesting?
Well, I mean, there are sort of typical ones about media consumption, where you work, so on and so forth. But then there's a whole series of questions that are kind of geared toward figuring out if you support Trump or not, or at least are in that vein. For instance, like, have you or a friend or a relative ever worked for a company that's owned by Trump? Have you ever considered yourself a supporter of or belong to QAnon, Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, Three Percenters, Boogaloo Boys, Antifa? So, right. So these are all very unusual questions for a voir dire process, but these are questions that are going to be asked, including, have you read or listened to audio of any of the following books or podcasts by Michael Cohen or Mark Pomerant, who's also sort of become a media personality emanating from this case?
And who knows, might be a witness for all we know.
I think he might be. He might be a defense witness.
All right. And then finally, a bigger picture question as we get into the actual trial itself, we get beyond jury selection. There is this evidentiary mystery at the heart of the case that you wrote about recently, and that is how Bragg connects the misdemeanor of falsifying business records to some other crime that turns it into a felony. And as you've pointed out, we don't know what that specific evidence is. Could you just explain that?
Yeah. So merely falsifying business records is a misdemeanor in New York. I think Trump could plausibly even just contest that part of it. But the thing that makes it the felony is, again, the proposition or the allegation that the business records were falsified to aid or conceal another crime. And the DA's office has outlined a few different theories that concern campaign finance violations and tax violations. Now,
so we know what the crimes are. We initially didn't even know that.
We did not. That was not clear out of the gate, but we know.
Out of the gate. But we know it's tax and campaign finance. One question on that. Is it possible that he adds to that, or at this point, is he locked into those two?
Oh, I think he's locked in. I mean, there was actually a fourth theory that the judge excluded from them advancing at trial.
Okay, got it. So that's been litigated before trial. What are the explanations out there in terms of the evidence that we know about or the witnesses where he closes that gap?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are, just based on public reporting, it appears that Michael Cohen, right, would be key evidence on this point, right? I mean, Cohen had discussions with Trump about the payment, how the payment was going to be structured, and the indictment references some of those discussions. So I imagine Trump's statements during those conversations will be offered through Cohen to some extent. So that's one part of that. If it's just Cohen, you know, that's going to be a pretty significant point of vulnerability to my mind because of sort of his, you know, history of lying and his sort of motives to sort of smear Trump here, or at least arguable motives. But there are potential other points of corroboration here, right? There's a witness list that indicates that Madeline Westerhout, who is a Trump White House aide, maybe called by the DA's office, and you know, maybe she's present for one of those meetings. I mean, I hate to speculate, but that's what goes through my mind when I hear that. It's like, okay, what reason would this witness be on their list? Because you could see a person like that being in a position like that and being valuable to the government for a reason like that.
August, thank you so much for breaking that down. Excellent.
Thanks for having me.
And for your schedule today, the House and the Senate are in. President Biden has two bilateral meetings today, one with Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani of Iraq, and one with Prime Minister Petr Fiala of the Czech Republic. I'm Ryan Lizza. Thanks for listening.